Nancy Peroso interviewing on June 11th, 2014, and at the home of our narrator this evening, and I will have him introduce himself and comment on his connection to the grain trade.
David Hearn. I started working for the Grain Commission in 1972. And I started in the protein lab. Want to start off?
Sorry for that. I had to break for a cough. So you started in the protein lab?
Right, as an assistant. And then I finished off as a grain sanitation officer.
And you started in
1972
and worked for how many
31
years?
Years.
31 years.
31.
Okay.
Yep.
How did you become interested in working with the Canadian Grain Commission?
Interestingly enough, I went back to university. I was working in a medical lab at the McKellar Hospital in Thunder Bay, and or Fort William, I guess, at that time. And I decided to go back to universities, and I did a major in biology with a minor in chemistry. And when I graduated, they don't save jobs for you in the lab. So there was nothing available, so I looked and to see what there might be, and this was being advertised just at that time, so I applied and I got it.
It was, there weren't that many jobs so directly related to the work that you did at university, so it must have been quite a plum position to get at the time.
Yeah, well, they wanted chemistry for sure, and I had a minor in chemistry, so that really helped. You know, the fact that I was in the job market before too might have helped. I don't know. And I don't know how many people applied, but I ended up as the assistant. And it was supposed to be, there was two shifts, and we were going to alternate with the head, Wally Zarowski. And then after I was hired, he informed me that he couldn't work the 4 to 12 shift because he had a store. So I got the 4 to 12 shift a lot. Yeah.
Were there lots of people working at the lab at the time?
I don't know the exact number, but there was a lot. I would say 16 maybe, 16, 18, somewhere in there.
Had it just started up?
It did. Yeah. That was something new for the Grain Commission. They had just, in fact, I think when we started, it wasn't even totally operable yet. So we started right from scratch and helped set it up. Wally got hired first, and then myself and then the other people. And a few of the people that started in the protein lab actually went on to greater things. Rick Bevilacqua comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
That's the main one I can think of. So what we did there is the Caldel process, chemical process for checking the protein in wheat, which they didn't used to do in Thunder Bay before.
Perhaps we could step back a bit. What is, to people listening, they wonder, well, what's the connection between a protein lab and grain?
Right. Well, the wheat is, they started selling wheat on a premium basis with based on the amount of protein in it. So the higher amount of protein, the higher they could charge for the wheat. And I think that was relatively new.
Why was protein such a an important factor?
The higher the protein, the better it is for bread making. If you like a bread like we do, where it rises a lot, the protein helps it do that. I think before that they were just selling it by grade. I never was an inspector, so can't say too much about that. But
so did the did each of the grades have protein levels then? Different. So could you buy number one with a certain percentage of protein and number two with a certain percentage of protein, or was the protein part of the classification? Do you know?
You know, I think it started out, if I recall, it was just the number one grade that was they were using protein on. The, because it drops off pretty fast. When you get to a three grade, it's, I don't even know what they use that for, but possibly they might blend it or they have other uses.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think it started out, and it was red spring wheat that we were doing.
So,
not Durham, for instance.
Because that's used for...
Yeah, you know, I think later on they did start doing Durham, but macaroni, that sort of thing, spaghetti. I don't think it mattered as much.
Mm-hmm.
But I think after I left, I think they did start doing Durham.
So when you think back to the early time with the protein lab, can you describe a typical day or shift?
Yeah, we used to go in there and different people would be assigned different jobs. We used to have a grinder and a weigher, and we had all these glass flasks of which you you put a weight amount of the ground wheat into. And then you added the chemicals, and then we added the acid, and we heated them for, you know, I actually forget the length of time, but 20 minutes, a half an hour, something like that. And we cooked them up, and then they were analyzed for the amount of protein.
And was every boxcar shipment of wheat at that grade level, did it go through, or did you just do representative samples?
I think we did all the red spring that came in the top grades. They'd send in a portion for the protein lab, and then it would get binned accordingly. They would know where we'd be, and they could combine them all.
Well, I'm wondering how the logistics of this, because if the oftentimes the samples of grain are taken at the elevator as the grain is being unloaded.
Mm-hmm.
So if they take the sample for this particular test at the elevator, haven't they already binned it before they've got the protein content?
They have. It is binned, all right. I don't know. See, I mean, you could combine it all into a bin and do the protein analysis, and going by the amount of tons you have in there, I would imagine, but...
Or was the protein done on shipping?
It was done on shipping as well. And there you'd get a truer picture. Maybe we didn't do all the stuff incoming. It seemed like we did an awful lot, though.
16 people.
We did
beavering away at the grinder and the scales.
We did a record amount. Our lab was, you know, I know that we would do like 20, 22 batches in a day. And we had banks, at least four banks, possibly six banks of Keldolf.
And what are Keldolf?
Oh, it's the glass flask. And then they'd have to go onto burners. And many a time you'd burn your arms. You wore oven mitts. I hope they weren't asbestos lined, but probably were. But anyways, they were partway up your arm, and you'd be leaning over, and if you touched the flask or any of the components, you get a burn on your arms.
Were there ever any accidents there? I mean, other than the...
Serious? I don't think anything serious. The odd time the flask would get broken accidentally. Burns. I remember getting a whiff of the acid one time.
What kind of acid was it, do you recall?
I'm trying to think whether it was sulfuric or hydrochloric. I can't remember.
Mm-hmm. Did people tend to stay? Like, just listening to you talk about the job division, grinder, weigher, what other positions would there be? So somebody ground the sample, someone weighed out the appropriate amount. Somebody would have actually done the test.
Yeah. And then there was always, we had to have standards. Wally often did that. I would have to do it sometimes as well. There would be, we'd have to, there was a paper component. We'd have to mark it down with the car number and everything. Then it went to the office, of course. And in those days, when we first started, they didn't have all the... I think it used to go by... I'm thinking ticker tape.
Telex?
Yeah, I guess Telex.
Yes, I think Telex was about the... was around at that time.
Yeah, a lot of it went like that. Yeah, and then once computers came, it changed a lot, but yeah.
Did people tend to move in and out of the lab?
There was some movement, all right. Yeah. Some went to inspection, some went to other jobs. Some people only were hired for summers. Yeah, there was a fair bit of movement. Yeah, but you know, as for the upper people, not that much. Yeah.
What you mentioned the change from telex, if it was telex, to the computer. What other changes took place in the lab over the time that you were there?
I don't know if we started with the infrared. I think it was about the time I left. They were doing spectrophotometry. They got rid of the Caldol banks and all that, and the acid and all that. Changed a lot. Yeah.
Was there a market for that leftover equipment? Did it get shipped anywhere? It was just sort of the test was too old and...
I don't know if... I think everybody changed about the same time. I don't know if there was... I think it got put into storage. I don't know where it went from there. Mm. They usually auction off that stuff. I really don't know where it went.
And where was the lab? Was it always in the same... place over your career?
Yeah, it was in the old post office building on Archibald, next to the gardens. we had the top floor. Post office was down on the bottom floor, and then eventually RCMP moved into the bottom floor. When I was still there, although I wasn't with the protein lab then.
Was it in where was it in relation to the entomology lab?
Entomology lab was right beside it.
Okay.
Yeah. The protein lab was large. The entomology lab was small, fairly small. I think they only had, when they started, they had two banks running the width, half the width of the building, sort of. And then about the time that I got into the entomology lab, we started expanding. And the protein lab didn't need a Caldol anymore, so they got smaller, and we got larger. So we ended up with part of the previous post office area.
Any other changes in the protein lab over your time there?
I think they started doing amber durum after, but I didn't follow it too much after I left.
When did
I was about 4 years, I think, in the protein lab.
And then you moved to?
To the entomology lab. Then I became the green sanitation officer.
So tell me about the entomology lab.
We were checking for insects in the grain, incoming grain, grain in storage, and outgoing grain. That's what we did in the lab. We were checking for insects. We also did reports of all the elevators. We did unannounced inspections on a routine basis, and we just continually went from one elevator to the next. And we did reports on them. We picked up samples of all the bins, and we did perimeter samples on the floors, anywhere which we might find insects. We also checked for rodents, birds, and to ensure that nothing extraneous got into the grain, being as how it was a food item.
How prevalent were problems?
Fairly prevalent. The winters, because of the cold temperatures in Thunder Bay, they were less so than the spring, fall, and summer. And that was a good thing. It would kill off some of the insects in the perimeter areas. Sometimes they even tried, on a cold day, they'd run the grain and cool it off and to try and kill the insects. You could not, if we found insects in the grain, we would use phosphine pellets, and they were not effective in cold temperatures.
What were common?
Insects?
Yeah.
The rusty green beetle was probably the most common. Red flower beetle was probably the second most common.
Did you ever find any unusual?
Weevils weren't very common. And we did find weevils from time to time. So that was always a big deal. And they were more destructive than rusty grain beetle. The The rusty grain beetle, what it would do is chew a hole in the germ part of the wheat. So it damaged the kernel. So it would reduce the protein. Of course, it would be downgraded if you had chew holes in it, that sort of thing. The weevil would actually eat out the whole kernel, leave nothing but the shell. Mm. Weevils were more prevalent in the States, warmer temperatures, than they were in Canada, but sometimes there was cars that would be used in the States, so they could have been contaminated, then they'd be used for the Canadian trade. So that would have been one of the reasons. And sometimes there was grain moving back and forth between the States, I think, with trucks and other reasons. And so we ended up there with a few weevils. So that was always a big deal.
So describe the test then for, if you were to... how, first of all, would you sample, let's say, a bin, okay, and then just go through the process of what would happen to that sample?
Okay. What we would do is we'd go to an elevator, and we'd have to lock out the belts, and then...
What does that mean to people who wouldn't know, like me, locking out the belts?
We'd have to go to the employees... and get them to go to the main panel and put a lock. They'd have to turn the belt to off and then put a lock on it.
Okay.
So that somebody couldn't come along and flip it on. So there was usually one or two people that did that. And so they would lock it, and then we were able to work on the belt. And what we did is we go around and... one person, would crank the handle open on the bin. So you'd crack it open a little bit, and we had a funnel kind of shaped flat pan. Had to be fairly flat to get underneath the hood of the dust hood. And so we'd slip that underneath. We'd run a shot, and the grain would go into that. Then we'd stick it into a plastic bag. And we had tags. We put the bin number on it, put it inside the bag, and of course we'd have the elevator on it, and usually the belt as well. So belt, bin, and bin number. Some bins open into a couple of belts. And then we would take about 2 pound sample. Bulk wise, our funnels would have been about 8 inches across by about 4 or 5 inches deep with a lower lip on it. I think I'm digressing.
That's okay.
So going back to the...
So once you've taken the sample?
Yep. So then we put them in bags and we tied them up. Then we would finish off the belt and then collect all the samples, put them into jute bags, fairly small ones, so we could lift them because it got heavy. And then we collected them. We usually got out there around 10 o'clock, sometimes 9:30. And then you work for about 2 hours, get your samples in, bring samples in, and then it'd be lunchtime. And then at the same time, once the... bins were done, we also did the whole perimeter area, so we got samples from every floor. Usually we look for dirty spots, or areas that we thought might have been sex. And then we check all that and did a report. I mean, some of the larger elevators, if you did two belts a day, and there was, it could be there for a week.
Mm.
Yeah.
And approximately how often would an elevator be
checked? When I first started, there was something like 14 elevators. So we didn't get to them as often as when I finished. When I finished, there was like 7, I believe. So you might have got around to them. Now, providing, like, sometimes they close too. Didn't matter. If they were closed, we still had to check the grain. I think maybe it was about 3 times a year to start. And in the end, we were doing like more than 4.
Hmm. Would somebody from the elevator company accompany you and take samples as well as a double check? Or?
Not usually.
Not usually.
No. There was the odd time that we had to go back to redo a bin for one reason or another. But normally we didn't have any of the elevator guys go with us. You get to know the elevators pretty good.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to come back to that once we sort of finished off the process here. When you tested the sample then, or examined the sample back at the lab, how was that done?
Once we set up the samples twice a day. So I'll take you through a normal day. When we started, we started at 7:30 in the morning, and we would take the previous night samples down first thing. They were all sitting, the funnels would be sitting on the a jar partially filled with water. And there would be a screen holding up the grain, and the insects were small enough, for the most part, to fall through. There was the odd one that was too big, but the larva would have gone through at least.
What caused them to fall through? Why didn't they just stay with the grain?
They were set up under lights, 60-watt light bulbs, and for at least 6 hours. And we had timers so that the lights didn't go out all night or usually in the afternoon we'd shut them down because we'd come in at 7:30, we'd take down the other ones, that'd be a half an hour.
Don't eat them all, share them.
I wouldn't. The 7:30, about 8 o'clock, we'd have them down. There'd be 2 of us reading the samples, and often 2 people setting up. So that would take us till about 8 o'clock. Then we'd start reading.
What do you mean by reading?
Oh, we had to analyze every jar. We look under a magnified light to see if there was any insects in the jar. So, and then mites, we also registered mites if there was large numbers. So 2 of us would read the samples with the lights, and we had a microscope too. So normally what we did, we'd screen them first, and if there was anything that we didn't know what if we couldn't identify them right off, we would set those jars aside, the positive ones, then we would look at them under the microscope and identify the insects. And then we would register the bin, and we would have to follow up on that. They'd have to fumigate if it was a full bin. Sometimes the bins were empty, so then they would have to spray out the bin.
Official notification order, or you just call up and...
Initially we called them up and but it would come out on a report. We would do a report in the end, and all that would be on the report, and then we would do follow-ups after the grain would be fumigated. They would normally send the grain in to us. The getting back to our day, that would take possibly up to 9 o'clock to do the reading, identification, follow up, the paperwork, and so on, phone calls. Then often I would stay behind, work on a report, or else I would go and do a follow-up. I often did the follow-ups on the report. We'd give them about 2 to 3 weeks to get everything done. If we didn't hear from them, we'd check with them, and or just go back and see what was still deficient, and we expected them to have that done. So getting back to the time, we'd mostly be out by 10 o'clock. Between 9:30 and 10, you'd end up there. And if I was doing the follow-up, I'd have my report, the initial report, and I'd go through all the different floors and see if they'd have to clean them up, plus spray them if there was insects. If there was rodents, they would expect to see some kind of bait station there. Or if it was bird droppings, they'd have to clean it up and so on. And then that would pretty much take us to lunch hour. And then we'd come back after lunch, and we'd normally, so they'd be up by 8:30. So 4 hours would be 12:30, 1:30 would be 5. We would generally take them down between 1:30 and 1:45, and do it all over again. Except in the afternoon, we would read them, and then we not only did, of course, the elevator samples. We did cars. The inspectors on the bench, if they came across a car that they didn't like the look of the grain, or if it had an odor, or if they noticed insects, they'd send it in to us. Also, we started and that was under my watch, where we did survey cars, and we did random cars. So the inspectors from every elevator, we asked them to send us in 6 survey cars, and so they would just take one randomly and send it in to us. So we would do all these cars as well as the bin samples, plus any that they suspected. And also occasionally we would go out, and especially when there was boxcars, we would go up into the boxcars. Sometimes the guys would do it. There'd be the odd time when you couldn't get a belt. So then you jump into a boxcar and take samples from it, and then mark the boxcar down. And then if we found that it was positive, we'd find out where that boxcar came from, and we'd follow up with the getting back to the country elevator. And then they would have to send in samples. They were not allowed to ship until they send in samples to Winnipeg. And Winnipeg would check those samples, and then if they had any grain that had to be fumigated, it'd be fumigated, and then that particular bin, they couldn't ship, and the other bins, if they were free, they could start shipping again. We also did boat samples. So we had to have a representative sample of every shipment going out, no matter what, wheat, oats, whatever. canola. So it meant a lot of samples.
Were did well. One question that came up as a result of an earlier comment about the rusty grain beetle and the red flower beetles, were those, would they have originated in the prairies, or were some of these bugs...
Where'd they come from?
Yeah, are they really...
you know, I don't actually know
in
where...
In the elevator.
You mean...
Like, did they come in?
Oh, and, you mean, yeah, did they come from, yeah, most of them came from out west. How they got out there, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether they came over with the Europeans when they...
Or they're native. I mean, we had our own native bugs.
Yeah. I don't actually know where they originated, but yeah, a lot of the infested grain in the elevators here came from out west.
Okay. Yeah. Did the infestations go? Were they sort of cyclical? Were some years better than others,
yep,
or worse than others?
Yep, for sure. The if you had a crop taken in wet in the fall, and they weren't properly dried, lots of times dryers were, I think, they weren't originally on most farms. A lot of the farms were small. A lot of the elevators were small. But as things progressed, as the farms got bigger, they started getting dryers on the farms. Some of the farmers did their own drying. And the country elevators got dryers as well. So they could dry the crops, and that helped a lot. Also, we got them to turn the crops in the cold prairie days, minus 40, that would help. And but still, lots of stuff would get binned, and if it was warm, that's all you needed for, if there was some insects in there, maybe the bin didn't get cleaned properly beforehand, they would multiply quite rapidly.
Were they, did the problems occur in geographic areas?
We had pins on a map in the entomology lab, and it was pretty widespread. Now, we didn't get all the grain sent to Thunder Bay. Some went to Vancouver as well, and so we only marked the pins on what we were getting, and I'm not sure if they did that or not, but it was interesting to note. And but there would be certain country elevators that were perennial favorites.
And why?
Infestation.
And why would you? What would you speculate, or did you know why that was the case? Was it a question of personnel? A question of facilities?
I think it was a combination of a lot of things. Facilities, some of those elevators were really old wooden structures. Probably never could get all the insects out if they tried real hard. And, you know, with cracks between them, the boards and everything. I think some of it was management. Some of it was certain companies were worse than others at times. I don't know if there was, you know, possibly maybe even the southern ones that were further south might have been more prone. But we did have ones that we used to see every year. Take a break. Are we answering any, all your questions?
Yes, we are getting there. Besides the elevator companies, were there any other organizations or people that you interacted with on a regular basis?
Besides elevator companies?
Mm-hmm.
You mean Grand Commission personnel, or?
Well, were there certain Grand Commission personnel? Did you interact with the railways at all, or the shipping companies?
Not so much shipping companies, the railroads. We interacted with them because if we found an infested boxcar, we had to instruct them to spray that car. So they'd have to pull it out of the system. And often the turnaround was so fast here that by the time we got a hold of them, the car was heading west, so they would get it sprayed. They used to spray with malathion.
Hmm.
They'd have to get it done out west.
Used to? Still do? Or still did by the time you retired?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Does it have sort of a shelf life that, or it would go right back into service?
Well, with malathion, it's a stinky kind of commodity and milky. I believe they washed them out after. So it wouldn't take all that long because malathion was a contact insecticide. So if it made contact with the insect, it would likely die.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the trouble is they'd have to pull it into a siding. You know, then it would have to be there. Then they'd have to get somebody, pesticide operator, to come and do it. Because I don't think the railroads had their own guys doing that. So it actually might tie a car up for, who knows, as much as a week maybe, or as little as maybe 2 days.
What kind of comments would you make about when you find bugs and then chemicals were used to get rid of them, and we're dealing with a food product here? What comments do you have to make about?
Well,
that?
They were supposed to. Phosphine ends up with a. It breaks down and you get a residual that looks a bit like ash. And they used to mix in the pellets throughout the whole bin. So you wouldn't get too much at one place. But in actual fact, when that grain would be loaded into a ship, a lot of that stuff would dissipate, especially if there's any kind of wind. It would certainly blow it away because it'd be very light, just a light white ash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did customers ever express a concern about
phosphine levels,
or even just the use of chemicals for?
Well, not that I know of. I wasn't really at that level, you know, that the buy-in and that would be the upper people that would be doing that, but. I mean, you have to be careful. As I mentioned before, the temperature had to be greater than 5 degrees Celsius to fumigate. And sometimes we would get samples sent into us that still smell like phosphine gas. So if by mistake it got dumped into the funnel, we'd quickly take it off and put it into a bag and it would have to be disposed of in a safe area, usually in a the bin outside. Lost my train of thought there. So
we were talking about the safety, I guess, of the chemicals used to fumigate.
See, we did have a reader, a gas spectrophotometer that we were able to check levels, and actually the elevator personnel had them as well. So they would go up and check a level. It was supposed to get to a certain point to be effective, so they should have checked to see if it was effective at that point. And then if the level was low enough to allow the green to be used again.
You stayed with this particular aspect of the grain industry until you retired?
Yep.
Over that time, was the Canadian Grain Commission doing research related to your work? Was there ongoing training for you and other staff of the unit?
We ended up, and I think all of us grain sanitation officers, I ended up getting my pesticides license, and I get a feeling everybody did. And it was useful, you know, because you had the knowledge of your malathion and the phosphine, and that was really the two that were used the most. So we also worked in conjunction with the Canadian Food Inspection Agency. They didn't have the manpower, though. They were actually, I think they were doing it before we started in there. They were the only ones doing any kind of inspection. So when we started, we kind of shared it, and on an alternative basis, and because they didn't have that manpower, we ended up with the major portion of the inspections, and they pretty much did a token inspections. They would do just maybe 5% or 10% of the bins or something, and so they'd run a few samples. They'd take some perimeter samples and that, but they left the bulk of it to us.
Were they also largely responsible for the ships, especially
yes.
The ships?
Yeah, that was their major. They ended up with us doing the elevators, and they had to do inspection of the ships before they could load them. So they would do samples of that if they saw any grain there. And if they found insects, they would instruct the ship to get sprayed, which was a big task and costly. Yeah. We joined with them in some instances to see what they were doing, and so we'd have a knowledge of what was going on too.
What would you describe as the main challenges of that job, if any? Your job over the years?
Well, I mean, our challenge was to ensure that the grain sanitation met export levels, you know, and which is insect and extraneous items. Anything extraneous shouldn't have been in the grain. We were checking for that. Canada had a good reputation for providing top quality grain, and nobody wanted to lose that position. We pretty much ensured that our grain was insect free, whereas the American system was totally different. They had the weevils, which were, like I mentioned earlier, a worse insect destructively than the rusty grain beetle, which is our most common one. And but what they did was, if the buyer found insects, then they would knock a certain amount of money off so that they could fumigate it. And, yeah. I mean, the other challenges, I mean, a lot changed over the years. When I first started, there was a lot of dust. The insects were fairly bad. The rodents were really bad. When I retired, it was like almost like night and day. You used to have to wear a mask. Well, I did. I was allergic to dust. Some people wouldn't, but it wouldn't have been good for your lungs anyways. You wear a mask because it was very dusty, but in that, the number of years I was doing that was about 27. In that length of time, you could pretty much walk through the elevator without wearing a mask, many of the floors, and breathing was not a problem.
What do you think made the change? We know with the dust, it was the improving of the
dust collection system. Absolutely. Yeah, that the elevators were pretty much forced to come up with a better dust collection system, and costly as it may have been, it improved things a lot. Mm. Insurance was another incentive, because over the years, there were elevator explosions. I only remember one when I was on the job. And it wasn't that major. The major ones were before I started.
Which one was that? Do you recall?
Pool 4. Pool 4 was a real bad one.
But while you were?
Oh, pool 15.
Which
it was. Oh, was it pool 15? Pool 15. Or was it Cargill? My memory fails me.
It's 15.
Might have been Cargill, Zero. Too. Might have been both of them. They both maybe had a problem. I think they did. Yeah. I think Cargill did,
what
too.
Happened?
I think what often happens is if you get an infested area with wet grain, it'll heat, and you can get spontaneous combustion from that. You know,
so
I don't know, but dust particles too. Any kind of ignition on dust particles would be very explosive. You know, and I don't know if I ever found out the causes of those exactly. But I'm pretty sure when we were at that one elevator that there was still, in a couple of bins, there was charred grain.
Mm.
Yeah. And I don't know if those bins ever get put back into use.
Hmm. Yeah, I think I'd heard about that explosion. I'll have to.
They weren't major
track
like.
It down. No, the 1945 and 52 were the major ones.
Yeah, yeah, they never were as bad after that.
Mm-hmm.
Thank goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I mean, you were. Are we still? Oh, who else were we working with? Yeah, I think. That's pretty much it. I mean, we had one person in Winnipeg that was over our green sanitation officers, so he was, and he would come down periodically, and we would all get together once a year for conferences and compare notes and see what was new. And
do you remember that person's name?
When I started, it was John Van Loon.
I've heard that.
Yeah. Yeah, he was there for a long time. And you know what? I'm very poor on names, and I forget the last
took
guy.
Over from him.
Yeah, he was. I think somebody else took over for a short while, and there was people filling in as well. And then it'll come to me, I think.
What was the name of that position, do you know? Chief entomologist or something like that?
Yeah. Yeah.
What did you like most about the job?
You know, we were busy all the time, and the time went by fast. Your days flew by. It was, we had a routine set up, and you come in at 7:30. We would leave at the end of the day, and like the days just flew by. Yeah, the but yeah, the time just flew by, which is, you know, is a good thing and a bad thing, I guess. First thing, you know, next thing you know, you're retiring. When you look back on it, you go like, holy mackerel, did that ever go by fast?
Yeah. Did you ever think about your connection with the farmer?
Oh, yeah. We thought about the farmer a lot. The in fact, I had to go... various ones of us would go out, and they'd have farmers' meetings in the winter when it was slower. And we'd take along a slide presentation, and we would show them the various insects that we came across, and what to do to prevent infestations. And we tried to educate them as well as we could. And there would be grain elevator personnel there as well. Yeah. We did a lot on education. I think it worked too.
So where would you have done these presentations?
Out west.
Just
Saskatchewan.
Small communities?
Yep. Yeah, they would, somebody would plan where these various meetings would be, and we would, I'd go for a week or so, and there'd be different ones of us that would do that. Yeah.
Can you, it sounds like a pretty steady job, important, but not necessarily exciting. But what, as you think back, what are your most vivid memories about your career?
The most vivid memories?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It was pretty much routine, you know, one elevator to the next, and I don't know, I can't think of anything.
Never
that
any
stands.
Incidents, things that have been along pretty calmly.
Well, the people working for me and even myself, you'd end up with certain injuries. Lots of hand injuries, scrapes, cuts, that sort of thing, because you were always leaning on those levers, and sometimes they were hard to go, and you'd have to bang on them to get them open, and they were rusty. Some of them were like, I don't know, decades old. And yeah, there would be... Nothing, I don't recall any major injuries.
You didn't fall into any bins or nothing. You had a good,
no,
safe job.
I didn't. Some people did, but not I. We'd have to instruct them. I mean, I don't think the personnel really liked the fact that they would have to go into a bin and clean it, because they'd have to... They'd be, have to be lowered down, you know, there'd be all kinds of safety precautions. they'd be lowered down. They had some kind of thing that would work on a lever, and they'd have to do the sides, and yeah, that wouldn't have been a great job. I don't think we were the most liked people, you know, because we meant work for them. And there was times we had to close the elevators down. We had to do it in conjunction with the CFIA. There were some instances like, I remember Green Growers A. Who was the superintendent? I think it was Cousineau. And it was probably a Friday that we closed them down. And of course, they can't ship. They can't receive, they can't ship. And so I remember him calling us up on a, I think it was the Monday morning. Okay, come and do an inspection, everything's done. You know, so we'd get over there as soon as we could, and both myself and the CFIA would go, Bill Hunt, and we'd go there and check the various things that needed doing, and usually they were done. That was usually the, when you get a lot of action, when you close them down. So there was always the threat of that. So if they didn't pay attention to your reports, you could shut them down, and they knew it. Although we chose not to do it in most cases. I think over the years, I don't know if we shut down elevators any more than a half dozen times, you know. But they knew that the threat was there, so mm-hmm. That worked pretty good.
A related question, sort of vivid memories, is have you already talked about the most significant events? Were there any, you did talk about some changes that occurred, but, you know, were there any blips in this pretty calm?
Well, when I think about it, trying to think, I think probably the most dangerous things that we did, and probably wouldn't have been allowed, you know, like if the powers that be knew what we were doing, was taking samples from those empty elevator or empty cars when we first started doing that, you know, and it was us that instigated that, and it became they ended up doing that sort of thing right across the country, but going in there and grabbing that sample, because you never knew when the engine would come along and back into the cars and start pulling them out. There was no kind of warning. You just had to keep your wits about you. I think there were some close calls on that, you know, because instead of going around, we went underneath. Quite dangerous. Yeah. But I'm trying to think. I mean, we had to. I remember going up on top of the tank cars too. But I'm trying to think why we did that. I mean, out of the Grain Commission, I worked for a pest control operator, and we fumigated some of the cars. In fact, the elevators ended up, they had their own guys with pesticide licenses, but eventually, I think they considered it too hazardous, and didn't want to get their license for various reasons. So they pretty much contracted it out.
Left it to the specialists.
Yeah.
Not a bad thing.
Yeah. It was more costly for the elevators, but it was the onus would be on them mm-hmm. to do a proper job. And we had to check for that to make sure that because they'd have to seal the top of the elevator and went after, or the top of the bin after it was fumigated, and put plastic over it, tape it, label it properly, as well as the bottom, so it couldn't be opened. And so I did some of that on the off hours, helping the pest control operator, and we did some cars infested the grain coming from infested stations, and I did have an episode there. These pellets, they came in aluminum vials. I think they held 1,000. And when you did a box car or a tank car, we're mostly doing box cars. And what you did was, you opened up the car, you put cardboard down, then you took the container, and we had it figured out how many pellets it would need. And then you spread the pellets up on top, and it was supposed to take like 5 minutes or 10 minutes before they start breaking down. But it was never like that. They always seemed to start breaking down. And if you did it in kind of wet weather, it'd be even worse. So I did, I was helping them do some, and that was over at, that was over by, I think it was by Oakaby that we were doing those. And after I got off, finished putting them up there, I felt like I was going to die. I told him, you better call the ambulance. I felt like really odd, like spaced out, you know, like I was going to pass out. And but after I got into the air for a while, it was okay.
And you're still with us.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, I think that those fumes were not good. Well, you know, they used to use, that's what they used in the gas chambers. That's what they use, those pellets, phosphine gas. Very lethal stuff.
You mentioned earlier about rodents, and I didn't come back to it, but I thought of it because you said rodents used to be really bad, but by the time you left, the rodents situation was improved. What happened?
Well,
in
you
the
know what?
Interim?
When I first started, there'd be 6 inches of 4 to 6 inches of dust on the floor, and you'd come across rats. You know, like they didn't stand there looking at you too much, but you'd see them down the belt, and we also did, we surveyed the outside of the elevators because many of them had tunnels outside, and then they'd come inside and then go back to their tunnels outside. And so we had some fumigation done. You'd throw pellets down into the holes, and then they'd block them off so they couldn't get out.
Same kind of pellets?
Yeah.
Multi-purpose pellets, bugs and rats?
Yeah, that stuff would kill anything, you know, so work good on rats too. Yeah, they'd start breaking down as soon as they got thrown in there, and as long as they didn't have two or three exits, we never knew whether they did or not, but we'd try and block off all at once. I remember when there used to be, across from Pool 3, they used to have a dump. There were old grain that was got wet and dry or heated and was no good. They dump it over there. You could sit there and just watch the rats crawling around. That was bad. Pool 4 was bad. Because they had banks, a lot of banks there, and they burrow into the banks. Now, I do remember one thing. I was walking around. We knew a couple of guys that worked at Pool 3. And one time I was doing an inspection there, and I come across one of the guys that I knew. He was a pretty big guy, pretty strong. I wasn't all that big. Anyways, he grabbed me, and he made like he was going to throw me up the window. He carried me in. Yeah. I didn't think he was going to do it, but I was a little...
And why would he have done that, do you think?
He's just joking around. We used to go camping with them, so we knew him pretty good.
Seem to be a few people like that who like to grab people and threaten them. That was sometimes not in an amusing fashion.
That was the only, time it happened to me. Yeah. You know, like, I don't know whether that had anything to do with it, but I kind of developed a little bit of a fear for heights after.
Yes.
You know, like, sometimes, like, some of those elevators, which one was it? I think it was Pool 4, actually. 4B. You had to climb the ladder from one floor to another to get up to a certain area. So you had to climb a ladder, and you're already up on the bin floor. You know, and I think it had a separate section that we had to go in. I think it was 4B. So that wasn't that great because, geez, you have your light and everything else, you know, and you have to go up there. And, yeah. I guess when you think about it, there's various things that happened over the years. They don't all come to mind. Less things you like to forget. And you did. Yeah.
So we talk about the various elevators you mentioned. Pool 4, not so much Pool 3, except other than the dump of old grain across the street from it. Did you have favorite elevators that you didn't mind going to because you knew it was going to be a quality operation? Were there some elevators that were so old that no matter how well somebody tried to...
No, you know, it didn't really matter how old they were. But there was some superintendents that were belligerent, and you would know that they're going to give you a tough time, and they may not do the report to your satisfaction, and they would crab and complain and so on. There was... some guys you got along better with than others, you know, but they changed a lot over the years. You know, like in 27 years that I was doing that, there was quite a change, you know, and I would say it was mostly for the better. Yeah.
More cooperative.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think there was anybody that ever said that they wouldn't cooperate because... they knew they couldn't, but I don't think, you know, like when you close down an elevator, I don't think you're all that well liked for a while. You know, it means having guys in on overtime and everything else.
Did you find that different companies operated differently? Was there more of a, did some companies have more of a, this is part of quality, and therefore we do it, and others that just sort of say, this is my business, and you shouldn't be involved anyway.
Yeah, it became that way. There were certain companies, yeah, that you would have better results from, and they wanted to cooperate because it was to their benefit too, you know, and the other ones would drag their feet. Who knows for what reason, you know, manpower or whatever.
In my mind, better than a warm cookie.
Jill?
What?
Okay.
Did I ever, I don't know if I mentioned how many samples, and I was trying to think of the exact number, but I think we ended up, we did close to 300, samples a day. When we finally, we kept enlarging our capacity, putting in more and more. So I think it was pretty close to 288. Can't remember the exact number, but it was pretty darn close to that. So that was a lot of samples that we could run through.
And how many staff were there when you
left? We ran, we usually had, it was myself, an assistant, and two or three other workers. It was better if we had, what worked out ideally would have been myself, the assistant, and five others. No, we need two on a belt. You need two people on a belt, so four people out. So at least five.
Did you keep track of what happened after you left? Did they continue doing the...
They did. It was pretty much my assistant took over from me and Patty Roy. It was pretty much status quo until just recently. And I don't know, I actually don't know. They've got somebody in there, I guess, that's just doing samples. And a lot of it's going to Montreal, from what I understand. The assistant, she's gone. I think they just got a couple people in there.
So they wouldn't be doing the elevator inspections then any longer?
I don't think so. I think, you know, it's come full circle in that length of time, what, 35 years or no, longer than that. I've been retired 10. So let's see, 31, 40, 40 years, it seems to have gone full circle. Because, you know, and I don't know if if the onus is back on CFAI. I don't think so. Mm-hmm. They don't have the manpower. They're cutting back on them as well. So I don't know where that's going to end up. You know, the inspection, or the grading, everything's changed immensely. Pity. I think it was a pretty good system.
Which sort of leads me to my... a couple of last questions, and from what I've learned about Canada's international grain trade over the many years of this project, it's a pretty sophisticated system that developed over a period of time. A lot of the people, obviously, that I've interviewed have been biased, but they considered Canada's grain handling and inspection quality to be the premier system in the world.
I think so. Yeah. You know, and we had climate that helped us a lot, too. Say, in our department, Australia, they had a pretty good system, but they had every insect known to man there, and they didn't have the benefit of cold winters, you know, because that helped us a lot. I mean, we did have insects, but nothing like a place like that, even the States.
So global warming could have some impact in the long term.
Not if it was like last winter.
That's why we've changed it to climate change.
Climate change, yeah. Forget global warming. The worst winter in 100 years.
So, did you ever get a sense that you, in your position, were contributing to Canada's success as a respected international grain trader?
Yep. I thought we did a lot. I think we cut down on the insect population a lot, you know, in the number of years I was there. It started before me, of course, but I think it made a big difference. Yeah.
Kept things under control.
Absolutely. You know, and I think our reputation was pretty good in those days. I'm not sure what it's like now or where it's going. Find out, I guess.
Maybe not during our lifetime.
I hear a lot of the service that we were doing have been contracted out. Yeah.
Yeah. If we are hoping to have to get some type of grain industry center established in Thunder Bay, and if that were to happen, what part of the entomology system do you think would be important to feature?
I think you'd want to set up a dummy with the lights and the funnels and the jar underneath, and probably with actually we had a beautiful chart that showed a lot of the different insects, something like that. Who put that one out? Degesh, one of the, I think, the makers of, could have been phosphine.
Okay.
They had a great one, which we had. In fact, it might even still be around. It used to be on our wall there forever in the office. Somebody hasn't tossed it, but when those things get smaller, it might still be there. I don't know if they've left the office or if they've still got the same facilities or what. If they've gone so much smaller than and doing that much less, they might have even moved the area.
I've often thought it might be nice to have a bug zoo.
It would be. Those guys are not exactly keen on being shown off, though. You know, like weevils, they would go, they could be entirely inside the kernel. You know, like if you waited long enough, they might come out, but you know, like you may not have the patience. Yeah, I don't think it would be the same as an ant zoo.
Do ants ever infest?
We never had a concern with ants. They like sweet things. I don't ever remember having an ant problem, ever. Mm-hmm. Now, mind you, they would get killed off incidentally, because many times if we found insects on a floor in different areas, and they'd have to spray the whole floor with malathion, that would kill any insects that would come in contact, so... Probably including ants, even though they're pretty tough.
Yeah, they usually go home too, don't they?
Yeah.
They come in and go home.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, they do tend to. They may not even go near the malathion.
Yeah.
You know, unless they got sprayed directly or something. But they got a pretty tough shell on them.
So, any questions I should have asked you that I haven't asked?
I can't think of any, but you know, you always think of stuff after you should have said maybe. think
of
any.
Well, thank you very much. We finally got the interview done. I'm very pleased that you were able to fit me in so shortly after getting back. And I'll let you go now and check on
the chemistry
of your pool.
I'll let you, you can come and help me plant flowers tomorrow night.
Yeah.